My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. As humans, we are composed of body, mind, and spirit. Neuroscience tells us the residence of mind is in the brain, a complex of neurons communicating with electrochemical signals. What about spirit or soul, the eternal essence of who we are? Where does spirit reside? And when these carbon-based containers that we know as our bodies stop functioning and cease to exist, where does spirit go? Does spirit or soul or personality survive after death? And if so, can the living establish communication with them? This ageless question is one we ask each in our own way, especially when it comes to those we have loved. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Annie Mattingly, experienced this firsthand when her late daughter started communicating with her, a communication that was both healing and transformative. Annie has an MA in Consciousness Studies and has worked as a teacher, magazine publisher, and hospice volunteer. She's now retired and lives in Cuesta, New Mexico. Her website is www.anniemattingly.com. That's spelled AnnieMattingly. And she joins us this evening to discuss her just-released book, The After-Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. Please join me in welcoming Annie Mattingly. Good evening, Annie.
Well, good evening, Victor.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
You're most welcome.
Now, please share with our listeners about your early life and spiritual background.
Well, I was raised in New Jersey, born in Indiana. They moved around my life a lot. My parents were basically agnostics and said, we don't know. But I attended a church once in a while. I went places with Jewish friends. Catholic and Protestant. I kind of explored around. Nothing fit very solidly. I had lots and lots of questions. And I always had a very strong sense that whatever God was, he, she, it was benign, that the whole of the created worlds was good. That was kind of the underlying sense. There wasn't heavy judgment and that was kind of what got me started.
And what were your beliefs about spirit or soul and whether they survived death?
I don't think in the early days I had a sense of spirit or soul, but I did not believe that you could die and everything would just stop. That made no sense to me. So in my 20s, when I first encountered the concept of reincarnation, I said, oh, that makes sense, because I had all these questions about why some of us were so privileged and healthy and happy, and others had bodies that were terribly deformed or were hungry all the time, had no benefits at all. And I couldn't understand how this benign God, as I believed in, could allow those variations. And with reincarnation, I said, oh, we need a lot of different kinds of experiences, and we come back. What happened in between was I didn't give much thought to in the early days.
When you learned or first encountered the study of reincarnation, did karma play a part in what you learned?
Yes, although my view of it is not the way that many Western people view it, because I don't see anything as punishment, or I see it as opportunity. We each have an opportunity. And so if we need to learn about being kind and we are not and we haven't learned it. We may learn that by receiving unkindness, not to be punished, but so that we understand what it's like to be treated in that kind of a way.
And in that way, we learn compassion.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, it's,
you've said it perfectly.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. I've been told by many people that I'm an old soul, and I said, yeah, I guess I still haven't learned all the lessons, so I keep coming back to school. I think there's a lot of us out there like that. So.
Oh, yes, yes. We have. There is a great deal to learn, and I don't think humans learn very fast, you know. That's why we have to keep coming back.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. Now, you endured the most difficult tragedy a parent may ever face, the loss of your daughter, Randy. Please tell us about Randy.
Well, Randy was a complex person. She always struggled with life. Even as a child, she was very tender and sensitive, and life was difficult for her. And I think she was, I don't think I realized until after her death exactly how strong she was, because despite all these struggles that she had with life, she was quite accomplished. She became a board-certified OBGYN. She was the head of the doctors in her clinic. She pursued, persevered against these internal struggles, but in the long run, I think they got the better of her. She wore out. At age 46, she began to become deeply depressed. I suspect she had issues with depression for a long time. She also had chronic pain that contributed to the depression, and also because of the pain, she was prescribed drugs, what we now know are opioids. Everything she took was legal. Everything she took was prescribed. Nevertheless, she became, I'm sure she was addicted to them by the end, I'm sure of that. And she became depressed. She became suicidal. She made some attempts, and eventually she took her own life.
Mm. You know, as a parent who has known loss personally and as an interfaith minister and counselor, I know there's very little most of us can say that will be consoling to someone who has lost a child. Would you share with us what it was like for you after Randy's passing?
Well, in the immediate aftermath, it was simply sheer hell. I did not know how to go from moment to moment, although I did, you know. I think that at first, well, I remember, I would say 2 or 3 months after her death, maybe three, I would think, awakening one morning, a Sunday morning, and feeling happy and being totally shocked because I thought I would never feel happy again. And it only lasted about an hour and a half, and was, you know, I just plummeted back down into the darkness again. But it gave me extreme hope, because I knew that if I could do it once for an hour and a half, it would happen again. And it did. So that was something to hold on to. It was like a life jacket for a while.
Did you ever question, have that question that I know those friends of mine who have lost children question, how could we not see it coming, or was there something we could do? Did you ever have those questions?
Not too deeply, because in the year and a half that she was so depressed, there was much that I did, much that other family members did. She was, because she was a doctor, there were even requirements. There was a state medical board, there was a psychiatrist, there was a psychologist. We just everyone kept doing everything they could. And I saw afterwards that it was a kind of a trap if I took this on as something that I had done, that I didn't do this. She did. And that was awful that she did, but I didn't take it on. There were moments when I would start going in that direction of, oh, what if I had done this? What if I had done that? I would catch myself and go, I don't think this is serving me or her, and I don't think it's true. I'm not sure that I could have stopped it if I'd done 100 other things.
What ifs and regrets really serve no purpose?
That's basically what I felt.
Absolutely. What advice would you give to the family and friends of a parent who has lost a child?
To give them love, to listen to them, if they want to speak, or simply be with them if they are silent, if that's what they need, or if they need to be alone, but to keep checking in. And I think also one of the things that I appreciated very, very much was when someone, it's not so much that I wanted to talk about her death or the day of her death, that was hellish, but I wanted to talk about her. I remember a friend coming over and saying, do you have pictures of Randy as a child? And I pulled out a box and just talked about what she was like. And we did talk about some of the dark stuff, but it was so sweet. And I realized later, I mean, eventually I saw that people were afraid to bring her name up. And I wanted to talk about her all the time, you know. Not all the time, but in the same way, I have two daughters. And the fact that she was dead didn't change the nature of my desire to include her in my life and in my conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think asking, just talking about the person and freely including them in conversations is a powerful thing to do to help someone who's in grief.
Wonderful advice. My guest is Annie Mattingly. She's the author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. And we'll be back with more of Annie after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart, while you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song. You'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage, and if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Annie Mattingly, the author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. You experienced the loss of your daughter, Randy, tragically. How long after Randy's passing did she come to you?
I think it was about 3 weeks. It was interesting that I didn't write it down. I keep a daily, it's a tiny little journal that's in my dream book, but I did not write it down for a few days, but it was around 3 weeks.
And why do you think that, just in retrospect, was there a reason for that period of time?
I don't know. Okay. I'll have to say I don't know.
What was the experience of her coming to you like? Was it visceral? Was it mental? What was it like?
It was visceral, and it first visceral, and then it continued to be visceral, and then it became verbal. I first felt her. I was sleeping, and I felt her. I didn't know it was her. You know, I just know I was awakened by these goosebumps coming up the left side of my body. And I was really annoyed because I didn't like waking up in the morning because then I'd have to remember that she had died. And it happened again. And the third time it happened, my entire body was flooded from the bottom of my feet all the way through my head with this. It was like a river or a waterfall. It just whooshed up my body, and I sat up, and here's the moment where it totally surprised me, because I sat up and I put my feet on the floor and I looked around the room and I said, Randy, is that you? If it's you, do something, move something. And there was a pause and nothing happened, nothing moved, and then I heard her voice. I heard it, and it was my daughter's voice is unmistakable. And she said, your body knows. And I kind of scanned my body, and I realized that I did know that my body had told me this. It was my body that directed me to say, Randy, is this you? My body felt her essential nature and recognized it. And I knew she was with me, and I knew that she was okay. And that was incredibly comforting.
Now
and also,
I'm sorry,
startling.
Yeah, and I can imagine
startling.
That. Absolutely.
Beyond.
That's the first time. Yeah, that's the first time you ever experienced anything of that nature. Correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now you said it was visceral. You said you felt it initially on the left side of your body. Playing a scientist advocate here, we know that the right side of the brain is the left side of the body, and the right side is the creative side, the side that has the ability to sense the subtle energies. Do you think that's why you felt it on the left side first?
Well, I did for a long time. That's what I thought. And then at a certain point, probably a couple of years after Randy died, my mother began to come, and my mother died in 1984. My mother began to come at the same time that Randy would come, and she came on the right side of my body with a similar sensation.
Mm.
And then sometimes she comes without Randy. Sometimes she comes by herself, and it's always on the right side. So go figure. I don't know.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Now, you heard Randy's voice, and
yes,
she said, your body knows. Was it as if
yes,
she was in the room with you speaking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that also came from the left side, too.
That's really fascinating. Now, you
it
said
was as
you,
though she were maybe 5 feet away, just making this statement to me.
Wow. And was it said softly? Was it said loud? How did it sound to you?
Just firmly. Firmly, not particularly, like, just in a normal conversational tone, the way if you were on the other side of the room from someone and you said, your body knows. It's not a whisper, not a shout.
Sort of a matter-of-fact statement, that's all.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in the After-Death Chronicles, you mentioned that you heard her voice externally only once. How did she continue the communication with you?
Well, it continued viscerally, and there is still that. 7 years later, I still feel her in my body, though we rarely have anything verbal going on. But the verbal part later was words that came, it's hard to explain, it came inside my head. It's as though there were two inside my head, her and me, you know, which was sometimes a little bit confusing. I worried a little bit in the beginning that this was my mind, but it was not. I never heard her voice from the outside like I did that first time, although we had numerous conversations over the first couple of years, and then they became more occasional, and now it's primarily just that's subtle, much more subtle, not this big rush of energy, just a little tingling that says, I'm here.
Mm. Mm. What did she share with you that transformed your grief?
I think, first of all, it was the sense that she was all right and that she was available, and that was pretty transformative. But then there were many, many, many things that she, I'm trying to think of something specific that she said. I asked her questions about whether it was a problem for the dead to visit. I didn't know, because people would ask me that. They would say, well, shouldn't we just leave them alone? You know, only a couple of people, but that did happen. And then she told me that it was not a problem as long as the living didn't have too much longing for the dead to be living, as long as we could maintain some level of acceptance of them being as they are, then the contact could be sweet and satisfying. And it was sweet and satisfying.
Is it possible that if someone has someone on the other side who's experienced this loss, has a lot of longing and pain and angst about it, does it have a negative effect on those on the other side?
That was the impression that I got from her, that was. And in fact, there was one time when for a period of time that felt to me like about 6 weeks, but turned out to only be 13 days, she didn't come. And I thought it was all over, that there would be no more contact. And when she, during that time, I had hit a wave, a tsunami of grief. I was just suffering so deeply, much more than I had been. And when she returned, she said that I needed to get my comfort from this realm, from this plane, not from her. And that was the sense that I had, that depth of that grief and suffering was not something that she, I don't know, could engage with or wanted to engage with, or that it wasn't good for me if she engaged with it. I'm not quite sure.
What did she share with you about what it is like on the other side?
Much less than I wanted her to. I really wanted to engage with her. I thought, here's my chance. That's the way I felt about it. I have a curious nature, and I was really curious. We all want to know what happens after we die, and I thought, here's my chance. But she did not engage on that level. I remember early on asking her if there were teachers there, and she said, yes, but mostly I spend my time in healing. But she didn't want to tell me how that healing meant was being done. And when I pressed her a little bit, either she wouldn't answer, or one time she just said, that's not what this is about.
Interesting. As a physician herself, it's interesting that her career would continue whether healing was given on the other side or to you on this side, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Although I guess I always thought of it as, well, I'm sure there was, I don't know about physical healing. I always thought of it as emotional, psychological healing from her depression. But then again, there was the injury to her jaw that caused her so many, many, like 25 years of chronic pain. So do we need healing for our physical ailments after death? I don't know.
When I say healing, I'm talking about healing on the emotional and spiritual level, obviously.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I just, as an aside, I wonder if whatever our profession or calling is on this side, if we carry that profession or calling to the other side in some way.
Well, there was only one occasion in which I felt that really strongly, but I awakened one night. I don't remember how far long after death this was, but her death, I mean, but I awakened in the middle of the night and I felt really, really sick, like I was coming down with something nasty. And she, as I was lying there feeling awful, just lying on my back in bed, I felt her presence. And then she did this thing where it's the only time this ever happened, whereas very lightly, not the strong rush of energy, but very lightly, I could feel her energy come up from my feet, up to my head, and then back to my feet over and over and over. And while this was happening, I went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I was totally fine. And I asked her about that. I said, can you do healing or can the dead do healing? I'm not sure how abstract I was about it. And she said, well, we do come with the light, and the light is healing.
What a beautiful message she gave you. My guest, Annie Mattingly, she's the author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. Annie, please share with our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and this wonderful work.
Well, the book is available on all the standard ways, some bookstores and Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. And there are links to that on my website, www.anniemattingly.com. And the Mattingly has this odd spelling, L-E-Y. There are links for that, for all those sources.
And do you have signings coming up soon?
I do. The next one, I've already had a number, but the next one is in Santa Fe, New Mexico at Opposite Bookstore, that's OP.CIT, and the DeVargas Mall, and that is on Saturday, October 28th at 2 p.m.
Wonderful. And we'll be back with more of Annie Mattingly and the After Death Chronicles after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Annie Mattingly, author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. So in the first half of the program, we talked about your daughter Randy's passing, how she came to you, that connection that was transformative and healing for you. How would you define your understanding now between this world and the life after?
Well, it's just a matter of form. There is a transition, and of course for us it's very hard to have someone be on the other, quote-unquote, other side. But I'm not sure that there is, on a consciousness level, that there is much difference between the two zones, other than the fact that people who have died seem to mature and be more clear. The personality doesn't get in the way, but existence continues. Whether there's existence here, there's existence there. It is a different form, and of course we miss those people.
Now, the clarity you describe, you had mentioned that Randy had told you that they come as part of the light, and the light obviously is pure healing and thorough. Do you think that's what that maturity represents to you?
I don't know if it represents it or it is the effect of it, because mm-hmm. they are in the light. They are able to receive the wisdom and them in themselves, and to skirt the things that complicate and trouble us here as human beings. Maybe the light just plain heals them.
Yeah. Well, it's completion in a way, isn't it?
I think so. I think so. There's a lot of mystery in this. I'm uncomfortable giving answers that are too firm, because my experience is only my experience. And, of course, what I've heard from all the other people, too. But still, there may be other things that I don't know about.
I think that's very, very true, and I think that's wonderful that you share that, that we are talking about personal experiences, and your experience may be different from the experience of others, and I think
right.
that we each get from the experience those things that we actually need to receive and get, and whether it's the same as someone else or not is irrelevant, because it's truly what our soul is asking for.
Right.
Okay. How would you... I'm sorry, you share that there are three key results of after-death communication. What are those three results?
Well, I think actually there might be four.
Okay.
But the first one is reassurance. To hear a deceased loved one say, "I am okay," is hugely comforting. And so there's reassurance and comfort. And the second is wisdom and guidance, and some of that's pretty simple, like somebody's driving and the voice says, "Slow down, honey," you know, or it can be much more important wisdom that supports the healing of a relationship, either between the dead and the living, or between the dead maybe helping two people who are living by their wisdom. Well, you know, maybe it is just three, because the thing I was going to say is that it comes as messages for others come, but that's not really a result. That's more of a technique. But the third thing has to do with reduced fear of death and an awareness that consciousness existence continues, that we don't just stop, that it's not an end, it's not a wall. There's an opening in this supposed wall that we call death. Maybe the whole of death is an opening.
Absolutely. I suppose initially that the concept that they're okay is very important. But mm-hmm. once you get past that, you know, once that's something that you absorb into yourself and find peace from, what would you say is the most important thing?
I think it has to do with our whole relationship with death, how we fear it for ourselves, how we fear it for others, how we think that there's nothing beyond it. And it's something, I mean, much of what the medical profession does is try to stop this, as though if a 94-year-old person has an illness and yet they're not strong, they're not capable of living a very full life, they may be very ready to go on, and yet we can fight that because we think that life is much more important than death, and I'm not sure that it is. And I think that's one of the messages that comes, can come, one of the results from after-death communication.
Mm. In the After-Death Chronicles, you share the accounts from more than 80 people who have had contact with deceased loved ones. And many of these have experiences that differed from yours. What are some of the different ways that those who share their stories with you experience this communication?
Well, there are a lot of ways. The most common way in all of the people that I interviewed was dreams. More people had dreams, unusually vivid and unforgettable dreams than anything else. But there are visions. I'm not a person who sees in my intuitive life. I feel and hear, but people had extremely powerful visions. There are electrical and physical manifestations, things that have to do with lights and alarm systems and blenders and that kind of thing. Lots of experiences with nature, and I did have some of those too, but with butterflies, birds, very common experiences with birds, rainbows, animals, synchronous experiences, where two things that could be called coincidence occur, and yet that's accompanied by a knowing that this has meaning. And there is just simply knowing. Sometimes people don't see, don't hear, don't feel viscerally, and yet they are totally convinced that someone is with them who has died.
Let's talk a little bit about the dreams, because you said that's the most common form.
Yes.
Can you describe some of the dreams that people have shared with you?
Let's see. This is not a case where I'll describe the actual dreams, but I will describe the results of the dreams, because there were two women who had very troubled fathers. One was an alcoholic, and one was simply abusive. And they had these women were adults, well into their adulthood, and their fathers died, and they were left with this wound because of the troubles with their fathers. And they had dreams. Each had a single dream which transformed that relationship and healed everything that was wrong between the father and the daughter. Another dream, at least two or three people who had dreams in which they were informed of a death that they could not know about in another way. One woman was traveling, and a good friend of hers came. I'm trying to remember the detail of that dream, and it's not coming to me. Very simple dream where he simply showed up and seemed to give the impression that we're going to stay in touch. And when she returned home, she found out that he had died at the time of the dream. Another man had a friend that he had lost touch with because they were friends when they were younger men, and then the friend turned to what my interviewee called a dissipated lifestyle. He was doing drugs and alcohol and not living a healthy life. And my interviewee had not seen him in years. But when this man came in the dream, I think he described him as like a young divinity student, just glowing with light and beauty, really beauty. Then the dreamer felt, oh, he must have died. And he called and spoke to the man's wife, and he had. So the dream itself revealed this.
And the dream showed him as being healed and whole as the shining divinity student. So it was a good message that this person received.
Right, very. Healing really for him, because he had always felt badly that his friend had gone downhill in this way.
You know, I found the stories, your book is delightful, by the way, and some of the sharing, and obviously there's sadness there, but some of the sharing is absolutely wonderful. And I found the stories you're very welcome, and I found the stories of those whose departed loved ones came back to them with nature signals, particularly heartwarming. Share a little bit about the butterfly story. I love that story.
My butterfly story?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, we had returned. My daughter lived 200 miles away, and we had gone there and spent a couple of weeks there and at her home. And when we were returning home, I was pretty nervous about it. It felt really strange that I would be in my home. I was kind of had accustomed myself in some odd way to her death at her house, but my house felt raw to be coming home. And so I was really nervous as we pulled into the driveway, and then we grabbed some things from the car and started heading for the house. And outside of our sun porch and back door, there were just this enormous number of butterflies. This was late October. We live at 7,700 feet up in northern New Mexico, and there shouldn't have been any butterflies, but if you did see one, it would be one or two, you know. This was, it could have been 100 butterflies, and they were all different kinds. There might have been 4, 5, 6 different kinds. And it was hard to get in the back door and not allow them to come in because there were so many of them, and they were just around us, surrounding us as we were walking in. We'd have to kind of push them away and work to get in the house. And they stayed there all day long, and we had to make several trips in and out of the car to bring things in. But they stayed there all day long, and then many of them were still there the next day. And the third day, there was to be a ceremony that a friend was performing in the house for Randy, for her soul. And there were still some of the butterflies there at that time. It was, and the thing is, it's not just that they were beautiful. This heavy feeling that I felt about coming home, I couldn't maintain it, you know, because sure. It was like the butterflies lifted it up out of me. And they didn't exactly make me joyous, but they certainly took me up from the pits. And that was a very special and beautiful experience.
The Uplifting Wings. Our guest tonight, Annie Mattingly. She's the author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. And we'll be back with more of Annie after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown-up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Annie Mattingly. She's the author of The After Death Chronicles, True Stories of Comfort, Guidance, and Wisdom from Beyond the Veil. So, Annie, before the break, we were talking about the way that departed ones come back and the way they manifest. For some people, they hear them. For some people, they see them. For some people, it's visceral. They feel them. For some, there are natural manifestations that take place. I'm just going to share a couple of my own experiences. I was very close with my paternal grandfather. My father was significantly older than my mom, and my grandfather was in his late 80s when I was very young, but he and I were very close, and I think he saw a kindred spirit in me in terms of spirituality. He was a bit of a mystic. And so he and I had a very, very special relationship. And I was about 7 years old, and I was in my parents' apartment, and I was reading something, and I looked up, And there's Grandpa standing there smiling at me. And I said, Grandpa, where did you come from? And didn't say a word. But he was as real as if he was physically present with me in that room, smiling. And then all of a sudden, he seemed to dissolve, sort of fade away. And I went into the living room, and I said to my parents, Grandpa was here. And they said, oh, it's that overactive imagination of yours again. You're imagining things. And a few minutes later, the phone call came that my grandfather had passed. And that was my first conscious experience of disembodied spirit. And it was a delightful way because seeing my grandfather was a true message for me. This was an acknowledgement of many of the things that my young mind couldn't really understand that he would share with me. But it was sort of a key to opening up my mind and my heart to the experiences that he was talking about. So that was my first experience.
That's a powerful one.
Absolutely. My dad and I did not have the closest of relationships until later on in his life. He was rather ill in the last few years of his life, and I became part of his caretaking team along with my mother. And in that relationship, the love that I didn't really truly feel until that time was very manifest. And so I felt very close to him, being part of this healing relationship. And after he transitioned, I didn't see or hear or feel him. But a couple of years later, I was walking home one evening, and I had a problem that I was dealing with and I was thinking about. And I sort of asked a question. I don't know what prompted me to ask the question, but I asked a question out loud. There was no one around me. I was walking through the streets. The streets were empty. And when I asked the question, I started feeling, the only way I can describe the sensation is like cobwebs or gentle webs sort of falling down around me. And I took that as a yes to my question, and I knew it was coming from my father. So those are two of the experiences that I've had with disembodied spirit, and I thought I would share those with you and our listeners.
And that, I mean, the first one, I've heard things like that, but not the second one. That's brand new.
Yeah,
you knew it, but it's there is that quality. You knew that it was your father.
And when it was
and you knew it was a yes.
And tears welled up my eyes, and I said, "Thank you, Dad." I said, "Thank you, Dad." It was just that type of that surety that it was his reassuring me that I was in the right direction in the question that I had asked. So, yeah, absolutely.
They're not so far away as we think, are they?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I found that the certain people have the ability to communicate with those who have passed on. Can anyone develop the ability to communicate with those who have transitioned?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. But I think that it is in our makeup to make these connections. Why some people have them and others don't, I'm not always sure. But I think that if we develop a relationship in whatever through whatever means with the invisible worlds, which means with spirit, with that which we cannot see, there's a better chance, because then we're acknowledging that there's more to existence, more to our lives than what we can see. If we reject that completely, it may make it harder. And I've also seen that people who have, I told you that first my daughter came, and then after a while my mother came, and I've had a few other experiences since then with a few others. So I think it's like a pathway. If we clear the brush, we can walk through more easily. And having made this pathway between me and my daughter, it seems to enable contact with others as well. And I've heard this from the people I interviewed as well. I can think of one woman who had never had any experience like this before, but her husband has come to her extensively, and she said, "Oh, now I talk to my mother and my father and so on." So once we know how, it seems to open the opportunity for others, which other experiences, other contacts, which to me tells me that it is a learnable skill. It isn't just, oh, well, she can do it and he can do it, but nobody else can. Yes, I don't think it requires special talent.
You share more than 80 stories of people who have communicated and the ways that they have communicated in the After Death Chronicles. And you mentioned earlier, and in the book you also mentioned, that dream communication seems to be the most prevalent way. Now, can people program their dreams or ask questions in advance or write something down as a question being posed and then ask for their departed to come to them in the dream and answer that question?
Well, I have not had that direct experience that you're describing, but I do write down an intention, which is sometimes a question, for my dreams, and I do sometimes get answers to those. And some people do, as you're saying. I figure these things can't hurt, you know?
Yeah.
If you turn your attention to the desire to have contact through your dreams, it makes it more likely. It may not be that it happens every time, but you know, I talked to a shamanic practitioner once who said that the problem with people having dream intentions is that they ask the question once and they don't get an answer and they just go on. He said, ask it every day for 2 months. You know, that really focuses us. That we're persevering then. We're following a path and it's strengthening the intention. So that is a possibility for making contact.
You had mentioned that people who just say, I don't believe, have a tendency to block the communication. Are there other things that can block or inhibit our ability to receive communication?
Well, as we were saying earlier, I think extreme grief may do that. Partly, it may be our own protective mechanism, because if I am in a place where every single thing makes me collapse onto the floor in tears, if my beloved makes contact with me, I may be so troubled by the fact that this is a reminder yet again of their death and that I can't hold them in the same way that I could, that this may even trouble me more. So that's one possibility. What was it you asked again? You asked
what might
block.
And I believe you had said that type of reaction also is detrimental to those on the other side. It pushes them away.
That's the impression I had from Randy, yes.
Mm.
Let's see, I'm trying to think if there's some other thing. But certainly just scoffing or, you know, even being embarrassed. Some people seem so fearful that they will be criticized and as being illogical and irrational or maybe even not sane, that they can push experiences away as well.
What's been your experience, or do you have experiences, have you interviewed people who have sought out communication through psychic mediums?
Yes, a few. This was not the focus of my book, but it came up here and there that some people were finding that helpful, and some people were finding it that if they opened the doorway through going to a psychic or a medium, that then they could have experiences later. And that is basically what happened with, I watched Randy's daughter, who was almost 19 at the time of Randy's death. She was completely believing of my experiences, but she wasn't having her own. And I heard through a friend of a psychic that was well recommended, and I gave Chelsea a session. And when I did so, she was so relieved by the contact that she had, and then she did have experiences afterwards that were a direct result of that, but they were with hawks and butterflies and eagles.
Mm.
And the woman said to her that this is how they would come. And I think the most moving one for me was interesting because Chelsea didn't see this herself, but she got caught in a very treacherous highway situation in a snowfall,
mm-hmm.
Where she had friends in the car, and it was, you know, there were tractor trailers jackknifing on the highway. It was really scary, and they're driving along slowly and carefully, and the friends go, oh, because an eagle landed in the tree right by the highway, and then came up and spread its wings and went back down. And that's exactly how Randy had been told her mother would visit.
Beautiful.
So when the friends told her this, it was like, oh, mom is here protecting me in this scary situation.
What a wonderful experience. What message would you like your readers to take away from the After Death Chronicles?
I would like people to know that they're those who have, that they've loved, who have died, are available to them and present with them much of the time, and that this is a good and beautiful thing, and that if they do have contact with their dead beloveds, it's a mystical experience and a gift.
True stories of comfort, guidance, and wisdom from beyond the veil. Annie Mattingly's The After Death Chronicles. Annie, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about this work.
Well, if they go to my website, you can go directly through Amazon, IndieBound, and Barnes & Nobles. But if you go to my website, www.AnnieMattingly.com, there are links right on the homepage. Is that what you call it? The homepage, the first page,
right? Mm-hmm.
To various ways you can do it online. And there are bookstores that are carrying the book, too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us and bringing us these messages of comfort and guidance and wisdom from beyond the veil. Annie Mattingly, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You are very, very welcome, Victor.
And thank you all for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.